A natural med isn't just a substance you take. It is a lifestyle that one lives to amplify their health. We don't always choose how long we will be on this planet, but we can take action on the quality of life that we wish to enjoy.
The Natural Med Podcast interviews different professionals and experts who look at improving the quality of health so they can live a more fulfilling life. Whether that be physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, or spiritually, we discover the secrets to their own journey and the small steps individuals can take on a daily basis to improve the quality of their life. Come with me as we travel, research, and discover how we can make incremental changes on a daily basis to live a more fulfilled and balanced life.
Hey there, we are back with another episode of the Natural Med Podcast. Of course, I am Nathan, along with my fearless leader, Nicole, and we are joined today by Hannah from Well Culture Counseling, and we want to take a minute to let her introduce herself and tell her all about what's going on over there.
Yeah, so my name is Hannah Poe Clausen, and I have been a counselor in the Denton area for going on, I think, about 4 years, 5 years, something like that now. The pandemic was like 1 year or 6 years, I don't really remember. But we're working with teens, adults, and we're soon to be working with children, providing counseling for people with complex trauma, ADHD, anxiety, depression. We're just here to help, so let us know what you need.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Hannah, for being on our show and our podcast and everything. And today we're going to be talking about, I wouldn't say a popular subject, but it's something that's important, talking about depression and, just kind of what happens when somebody you love dies by suicide. I know myself a couple years ago, my stepfather, Dale, died by suicide, and that was very hard on myself, on my family, my sister, and my mom, and my brother, all of us. It was really tough, and there was a lot of questions of, like, you know, why did this happen? And it was just really hard. You know, it's very different when I feel like when somebody dies by suicide than dying by other causes and everything. Do you get a lot of, clients, who deal with, their loved ones that die by suicide?
Yeah, actually it's something fairly common that people come into therapy for. I've worked with it across the lifespan, kiddos who have had parents that have died by suicide. I've had parents who've had kiddos who've died by suicide. So I've had lots of different people who have been impacted by this come in and seek counseling for it.
Yeah. And what are some things, that you would, say could help to, family members and friends of people who die by suicide?
Yeah. So I think first, something you said a moment ago is really true. And also I want to add to it a little bit about, it feels really different than, death by accident or natural causes or these different things. And I also think that it's like that. And there's this other piece with it. So All of that natural grieving process of going through, people talk about the 5 stages of grief, which I think it's important to say here are not linear. We can go through into one and back into another, and keeping that in mind, that there's not, there's denial and then there's anger and then I'm going to do this one and then I'm going to do that one. That's not necessarily true. But I think a lot of people can struggle with questioning, asking, did I do enough? Did I in some way impact this? And I think that's a really common human experience.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, because we knew that my stepfather had depression and everything, and he was going through that for a while. And, we tried to talk to him, and I know, we tried to help him. My sister tried to help him. And so, it's like when it happened, when he died, it was like, kind of like, you know, did I not do enough? You know, especially myself as a nurse, you know, I try to help as many people as I can. And, you know, when you can't help somebody, it just, you know, it hurts, especially when it's somebody close to you.
Yeah.
And everything. I know that was pretty rough and everything, going through that. But you know, it's interesting through the, you know, that day, when he died, I was at my parents' house, and we were talking with, some of the police officers and first responders and everything. And I know one police officer said to me, which, you know, I don't forget this till this day, but it's like, you can't control what other people do. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. You know, you try to help somebody and you try to be there for them and you do the best that you can do for them, but you can't control, you know, what other people do. And I had to kind of keep telling myself like that, like, you know, it's not your fault and everything. And, so that was hard. You know, I know with the pandemic and, you know, I've heard a lot of the suicide rates have gone up and everything. And, but what would you suggest for people who may be feeling down, whether it be related to the pandemic or from, you know, having to go through like, social isolation, or what do you recommend to people if they feel like they're becoming depressed?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, and you mentioned this about being able to reach out to loved ones, people that you care about. I think a huge thing I'm noticing in especially our teenage population, it's definitely present in other populations, but is this feeling of I'm alone, I'm going through something really different than other people. And I think Kristen Neff talks about self-compassion and sort of this idea of common humanity versus isolation. Mm-hmm. And I do think that this is much more common than people think it is. And it can a lot of the times feel like I'm the only one that's going through this. Other people won't understand. And so if there is someone who's listening, who's going through depression right now, we all go through it, right? I'm a mental health counselor and I get depressed. Yeah. So it's very common. It's part of life. It's natural. And so being able to first know that you are not alone, and that there are people out there that are willing to talk to you, whether that be close loved ones, or reaching out to a mental health provider or something like even a psychiatrist if you want to try a medication management way, or talking to your yoga instructor. There are plenty of people out there that care about you, even if you can't see it right now.
Yeah, and that was one thing that, you know, and unfortunately with our situation with my stepfather,
yeah,
that happened, but it seemed like it brought me and my sister together better,
yeah,
or I guess tighter, like our relationship, we just bonded a lot better. I'm pretty close with my sister. We're 9 years apart, but it, yeah, seemed like that just, you know, it was so heavy on our hearts and it just, you know, kind of brought us together stronger. But yeah, that's so true though, you know, being there for other people and then kind of talking to people and that helping with depression and everything.
Yeah. And I think too, something you said, thinking about like the survivors, the people who are kind of in the wake of this new information, right? Learning that someone, has died by suicide. A lot of the time our instinct as humans is to make meaning. And especially like someone like you, right? You're really well educated, all of these things. And you probably have a lot of, responsibility for the things you do, paying your bills, all of these things. And so it might be an initial instinct for us to want to take responsibility in these situations.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an uncommon experience for survivors, the people who are left
yeah,
after the aftermath of a suicide.
Yeah, I see that because I, you know, the first week was after my stepfather passed away, it was like, I was just kind of like floating. Like I felt like I was just in an out of body experience for like that entire week. And I actually reached out to a counselor, after like 5 days of just feeling like not myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I'm a nurse, so I know, you know, people go through those stages, you know, that's so normal whenever somebody that close to you that you love dies. And I was just like, I know there's a grieving stage, but why do I still feel like I'm floating on air? You know, it was like day five and I reached out to a counselor and they're like, you know, that's normal. Like, I know you're aware of it, but you know, it could take like a week. It could take a couple weeks. Like, that was all normal. And it was, you know, I knew that in my head because that's what I learned as a nurse, but actually going through it was so different.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It was so different.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I've taken care of so many patients that have passed away. You know, I see a lot of really critically sick patients, and I've seen a lot of patients die, unfortunately. But it's so different when it's, you know, your own family yeah. member and everything. And, it's hard. It's hard to go through that.
Yeah. And I think that coming back to that idea of like, there is a grieving process. And I think that in any grief, you know, our body does lots of different things to try and protect us. And whether that's maybe similar to what you were talking about before, almost a sense of dissociation from reality because it's so painful. Like, our body has just these deep seated ways of trying to protect us. And it's normal to not feel normal. Yeah. So if you're noticing those types of things coming up, again, you're not alone for having the grief process you're having, whether it's grieving someone who passed by natural causes or something else, or sort of these shocking, more like traumatic experiences of death. Not that those other experiences couldn't be traumatic as well.
Yeah. What would you say for people who are feeling depressed and everything? And when do you think it's like, you know, you're feeling depressed and it may be a little bit, but when would you say it was something like you need to talk to a counselor about?
Yeah, I think, and this is going to be a little bit technical and then I'll break it down. But in the counseling world, we say when it's clinically distressing or impairing. So if you're noticing that your life is not operating in the fashion that you want it to operate, or that something's getting in the way, I'm not feeling motivated, I'm feeling down, I'm not really able to get what I want in life, feeling unsure of yourself, feeling irritable, any of these things, when it's causing clinical distress or impairment, that's when it's really important to seek help. And I think there are lots of ways to kind of gauge that. Is there a change? Has something significantly shifted? Maybe you've had a sense of knowing for a long time in your life that something doesn't feel right. Maybe it's been lifelong. But if you're looking around and you're saying, this isn't what I'm hoping for, this isn't my optimal me, then I think that's really a good time to reach out and talk to someone, even if that's just someone close, and then maybe making the decision to go to counseling could be a helpful option.
Yeah, definitely. That's good because, you know, like we have on this podcast, we talk about our physical health, we talk about nutrition, you know, we're probably going to talk about financial health and everything, but mental health is so important, and taking care of your mental health is super important and everything, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's something that's really risen to the forefront as of late. It has become very popular to seek out professional help for your mental state. And in the wake of that, I wanted to circle back to suicide in terms of prevention, if at all possible. What is the average person, and someone who is not, you know, clinically trained or trained like you, mm-hmm. what are we looking for? What would be warning signs that a loved one or a friend or someone is dealing with those thoughts?
Yeah, and it's so broad because we a lot of the time hear, like, I had no idea, right? Yeah. And so yeah. I think things to look for, obviously, with those depression symptoms, it's important to keep in mind things like people withdrawing, being more guarded, maybe saying things that are concerning to us that typically we might brush off, but a big one for me is to just trust your gut. I think sometimes yeah. we notice when things are off, and a lot of the time our coping skills tell us to sort of push it aside or sort of brush it aside. But if you notice that something feels a little off, a little different, you know, you know your people better than anybody knows your people. And so if your people are acting differently than you're used to them acting, and it seems significant, one thing I've really learned is just asking the question. It's a hard question. A lot of the time we think, asking someone, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Have you thought about hurting yourself? Have you thought about suicide? Can be this huge reaction of somebody getting angry or feeling really upset with us. How could you think that of me? And most of the time people will respond with great gratitude, feeling grateful that you've asked the question. Yeah. So I think a lot of the time we stray away for fear of anger, but asking the question really can be meaningful or impactful to even open up and say, this conversation is okay to have. I'm a safe person to have this conversation with.
That's good.
Yeah, that really is. I had a follow-up question, but I think you answered it because I was going to also ask, you know, how do we approach that? You know, how do we be sensitive to a person who's dealing with that kind of hurt? You know, and I really feel like most people have dealt with enough trauma, you know, up to this point that they have had those thoughts, they have had, you know, feelings of helplessness, but when somebody's dealing with it in a really severe way, I mean, would you say that being sensitive to that situation, and what are words, what's the type of language that we use mm-hmm. to engage?
Yeah, I think that that's, again, coming back to that idea of like, just ask. And I think that a lot of the time we think, oh, well, this is going to upset them or be hard. If anything, if you're willing to name something, and we talk a lot about this with shame work of like, there's a lot of shame associated with having suicidal ideation, right? We feel like it's outside the norm. It's not something that's acceptable. And so if somebody is able to name it, Brené Brown says you have to name it to tame it. And so with shame, if you're able to just name that for them, hey man, have you been thinking about killing yourself? I'm worried about you. That just gives the person permission to now, oh, we've named it. So now we can talk about it. It removes the shame for them. So opening that conversation by just using the words that come to you. I know, sometimes if there's something going on, we feel like we have to tiptoe around it, but being direct with people, I think in these situations really gives the listener, the person who is struggling, more confidence that you're able to talk about it. I think sometimes that it's something going on and kind of dancing with it shows a discomfort on your level. So just coming in and asking that question directly, I think, can be really the most helpful way to address it with someone.
Yeah, that's really insightful because when you think about it, when you're pinpointing it and you're saying, look, I care enough about you. I've noticed this. I see this you know, we're not dancing around it anymore. So let's deal with it.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I'd never heard anybody say that, but that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And it shows that you're a safe person to talk about it because you're willing to talk about it. A lot of people are, if you're in that place, the fear is that no one's willing to talk about it with you. And so presenting yourself as, I'm a safe person to talk about this with. Let's deal with it. I'm on your team. Let's go.
Right. And, you know, there can be negative influences on the outside that would say, you know, stop thinking about that. That's not normal. It's not, you know, you just leave that alone. And then you've got these people who end up hurting themselves because they got dismissed.
Yep.
And dismissal, in my opinion, is the worst way to go about it.
Yeah.
Because what they're feeling is real. Depression is real.
Yep.
I mean, and it hurts.
Absolutely.
Physically.
Yep.
You know, anxiety hurts physically. And it's just, it's so necessary, in my opinion, to have those conversations. Now, as a parent, it's one of the things that I've dealt with my children and dealing with depression, dealing with anxiety. And it's, you know, several hours of talking in the middle of the night because they can't go to sleep because they're so stressed out. So, I mean, and if you're listening and you're a parent and you're dealing with any of this with your children, just listen. Don't judge. Just listen because they have a lot to say and they understand a lot more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And I think to add on to that a little bit is to say that, fixing it isn't necessarily the optimal approach in that moment. Like we don't need a solution to this problem. So keeping in mind that as counselors say, like the talking cure, is a cure. So yeah. Just being mindful that maybe your role isn't the fixer, where I think a lot of the times parents are the ones who want to go in and battle the bad guy and take away all the pain. It's right. It's just being there.
Yeah, and you would attest to that too, Nicole. You're a parent, and I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, you're a mama bear. You want to protect your babies.
I am.
And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm a papa bear, and I want to protect my babies. I want to do everything I can.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've had this conversation with my children. I love you. I would do anything for you, but I'm not qualified to give you some of the answers that you need. But I'm happy to listen.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So what do you got to say about that, Nicole?
Good. And the fact that you're there for your kids and willing to listen, you know, in a non-judgmental way, because I know, you know, some parents can be like, well, you just don't need to talk about that. Like, you know, and trying to shoo it off or trying to fix it, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's good to be there to listen and everything, because kids go through so much, especially it seemed like the teenage years. The years you're in school, and there's so much judgment, and there's so much pressure to be, you know, like this perfect thing, and so much competition and everything. I mean, I myself went through pretty bad depression when I was in middle school, and it was hard, you know, and I'll admit it. I had, you know, suicidal thoughts when I was in middle school, and you know, I hope most people don't, but you know, I'll admit it. You know, I was in, it's like you get in this like black hole of depression, and it just seems like your vision's just tunneled. Like you can't see anything out, anything better. And I just felt like that way for a while. And, you know, thankfully my parents listened to me. You know, it's crazy because, my parents are divorced. And so I lived with my mom and my stepfather who passed away from suicide, but you know, he was there and he listened to me go through all that depression. And it's just, you know, it's crazy how things happen. But my mom, you know, they sent me to a counselor, and it was good to talk to somebody who, doesn't like it, it seemed non-judgmental because it's not your parent. It's not your friend. Yep. It's not even your spouse. You know, it's a counselor, and they can be that like non-judgmental person to talk to and everything and help you through it. But yeah, with my kids, you know, they've gone through their ups and downs and everything. And you look at your kids and you're like, okay, how can I fix this? How can I make this better? But sometimes you just need to, get them professional help and everything to help with their mental health and everything. So it's hard. It's hard when you're a kid. It's hard when you're an adult, you know?
Yeah. And I think that that's important of like normalizing that, normalizing that these are thoughts that I would, I'm not going to put a definite statistic on it, but I would say probably 90% of people at one time in their life has at least had a passive suicidal thought, and I'll kind of define what that means. So passive suicidal ideation is sort of like, it would be easier if I wasn't here. It'd be, you know, easier if I, you know, didn't wake up tomorrow, or if I just kind of stopped existing. And so I think most people have had a thought like that at some point in their life. And so saying it's taboo to think about it, or to even have that thought cross your mind, I think is not super helpful, because we've all been there. It can be scary. But I think also, like, something I'm learning specializing in traumas, there's some people who have had some really difficult upbringings, difficult situations that have happened, and that this thought or this comfort that I could end it sometimes can be a comforting thought, which some people might think like, well, that's really strange. But if you're in such an oppressive environment that's really all that is keeping you going is that I have a choice to end it at some point, we really want to work with those people to recover from the trauma that they've suffered, but not to tell them that the thought itself is bad or wrong, because now you're taking away one of their few coping skills. It's like thinking about this thing. Mm-hmm. So I say that to say that I think it's important for us to normalize that those thoughts come up for lots of different types of people. It's not just this type of person or somebody who struggles with clinical depression, that most people at one point in their life will have some thought about suicide or what it might be like to just stop existing.
Yeah. No, that's a good statistic to bring up because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people feel like, you know, I'm so depressed. I just don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. And then they feel alone. Like, you know, you feel like you're the only one that feels that way, which, you know, it's a feeling that kind of, you know, a lot of people experience. So that's kind of good to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And everything.
And like I said, I don't know that that's a 100% accurate number. That's more of just a guess on my end, but yeah. I have lots of people who have thought about it at some point or another. And so normalizing that those thoughts exist, I think is really, really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, so with depression and feeling down and everything, what are some things people can do to kind of lift their spirits up, help them through depression? I know, you know, obviously counseling is good to talk to somebody, but maybe like going for a walk or like, you know, non-medication, you know, I know there can be severe clinical depression and sometimes, you know, you need a medication, but what are some things people can do to kind of like lift their spirits up and maybe try to help them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, one thing a professor said in grad school that stuck with me is sort of what she deemed the European model of, helping with mental health. And so the first thing, that I really recommend people to do is exercise. And so I say exercise, but body movement of some time. That doesn't mean that you need to go get a gym membership and be lifting the heaviest weights every day. Walking, put on your favorite song and dance. There's lots of different things that you can do to move your body, and your body was designed to move. And the more sedentary it is, the more likely we will be to feel these feelings. So that's my number one. And I want to add with that, another sort of quote that I heard that was really important, which is action before motivation. I think a lot of people who are in that depression state say, I'm not motivated to exercise, or I'm not motivated to move my body. Of course you're not. It's not something that you're used to doing. And so being down on yourself to say, I'm not motivated to do that, I don't expect you to be motivated. I think if you are able to get yourself in a place where you can take action, then it's easier to take action next time and take action next time. And then the motivation builds over time. So if you're waiting for yourself to get motivated to do that, whether you are struggling with depression or it's just a new routine that you haven't built before, like there's not something wrong with you because you're not this, you know, perfect person who's just motivated to get up and run 17 miles every day. No one's motivated to do that before their action. You started taking action and now you're doing that more and more, and you crave it. You want it because it's something that you've built for yourself. So my number one is always exercise. My number two is to talk about it. Talk about it with people who can normalize it with you. Whether that's seeking professional help, a counselor, maybe you have a friend or a coworker or a family member who you know also struggles with depression, and being able to just get that out, hear yourself say it. Those are always like my one and my two. And then three, if you need to seek medical support and look for medication management, that's always available to you. I think for me, it's a building block. So we want to build in the exercise. We want to start talking to someone. And then if we need to seek medication management, we definitely can. But isolation, irritability, all of these are signs that you're feeling depressed. So if you're isolating, again, action before motivation, it might take you reaching out and feeling really uncomfortable to reach out. But I can almost promise that it'll pay off.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love, me personally, I love that you mentioned about exercise.
Yeah.
'Cause I had mentioned that I went through a depression and had suicidal thoughts and everything. That was in middle school. And freshman year of high school, I joined the cross country team, ran track. And then that's when I became a running addict, I like to call it. But it helps me to this day. I do some type of movement every morning when I wake up. Even on days, you know, that I work and we're crazy busy, after I get my nap, I do some type of movement, and it helps your mental health. Mm-hmm. It helps like clear my head. Especially running, I can just go, and I know I'm a crazy runner, but I just go on like a long run, and at the beginning of the run, my head's like jumbled, like there's all this stuff and it's like chaos in my head. And then I start running and it just like, washes it clean and it like clears my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's the endorphins or whatever else from running, but it helps a lot.
Yeah.
I totally 100% agree with that.
And if I can offer for people out there that are, trauma, probably small t, traumatized from running, whether that was in gym class or whatever.
It's like Josh.
I really encourage, I think yoga too can be really impactful. I am certified as a yoga teacher, but one of the things that I think yoga can teach us, and especially if you have a teacher who is able to give uplifting remarks like during class and speak to those things, you can learn about sort of the bell curve of managing the emotions as they come. A lot of the time when we get to the top of an emotion, we want to stop it. Okay. And so I would almost say that people who are dealing with depression or suicidal ideation, you want that to stop. And so you cut it off, but you don't allow yourself to sort of come down the other side. And being in things like yoga poses that are difficult, you can learn to regulate your emotions and notice that even if you're getting anxious, man, this is starting to hurt, it'll start to come down the other side and you can regulate. So finding those types of things, I suggest yoga because it builds in breathing and it builds in body movement. It builds in lots of different things, mindset, but allowing yourself to sort of experience the emotion and feel it wash down the other side and knowing that those things ebb and flow, I think is really important. I'm sure with running, right when you get started, it's not like, man, this is super easy and I'm already experiencing a runner's high. But as you get into it more, you're able to sort of process and relax into it to not sort of push that feeling away to keep going.
That totally makes sense. Because you're right, when you start running and you're warming up, you're like, oh yeah, why did I, you know, it's like too early or you didn't stretch enough. Yep. And you know, you're not feeling 100%, but after, you know, you warm up and after like a mile or a couple miles, you like, you feel good and you get that runner's high and you're like, oh, I feel amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything. Yeah. And yeah, that's awesome. That's good. So I love it. Nathan, I can see you. Your daily movement is dancing and singing. Yeah. In the mirror.
That's funny how we started off with a very heavy topic today and then we circle back to something positive. And that's really what it's all about. You know, when we talk about, you know, the suicide ideation, we talk about depression and anxiety, it is a heavy topic at the beginning.
It is.
But there's always a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's always a goal to look forward to. And having, you know, someone positive that, you know, people can go to is great. And then, you know, friends and family and a, you know, good network.
Yeah.
And, of course, just being outdoors and things like that. So that's really awesome to see that. You know, even though it was heavy, and Nicole, I could see it on your face too. It was heavy, and then now you're smiling and laughing about it. So that's always awesome.
And if I can comment, Nathan, on something you just said,
sure.
I think it's super important. Is one model I heard is it's 10% solution. So if suicidal ideation is a thing that's getting you through, thinking I can just end things, I can be out of here, I'm not going to be able to give you as a counselor one thing that's going to work. But surrounding yourself with friends, mm-hmm. Going to family, you know, finding something that you enjoy, like a hobby, whether it's roasting your own coffee or doing those types of things, going for a run, adding in yoga. If you can find 10% solutions, therapy might be one of those solutions. We can replace that ideation with these other things, but counting on one thing to be a fix, I think is a lot of pressure to put on one specific intervention, because in a lot of ways, suicidal ideation really is sort of an all-encompassing sort of fix, if you will, in a way. And so remembering that you're not going to find one thing that can completely replace it, but finding those 10% solutions can be really, really helpful.
That's awesome.
That's good. Yeah. I like it. It kind of puts into perspective how important balance is and everything.
Absolutely.
I love it. So how can our viewers and listeners find out more about your counseling services and also you as a yoga instructor?
So I'm actually not currently teaching. I took a break from it during the pandemic, but it's something I definitely want to bring back and blend with my counseling practice. For right now, if you want to seek counseling services with myself or someone at my practice, you can go to wellculturecounseling.com or you can email us at info@wellculturecounseling.com and we can give you more information about different things that we can offer. And if you or a loved, if you have had a loved one that has died by suicide, feel free to reach out about our IADC, that's induced after death communication. Sounds really intimidating, but it's a training that I did that can help you with bilateral stimulation, turning on both parts of the brain, and we can work on feeling connected to those warm, wonderful feelings that you have with your loved one, rather than only remembering the tragedy, the hard parts, the heartbreak. So let us know if that's something that you're interested in.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah. And then also, and I'll put it on the show notes and everything, but if somebody is feeling suicidal, I know there's the National Suicide Hotline, and I can post that number on our show notes. Is there any other resources you suggest if it's like a kind of an emergency, somebody's feeling?
Really bad? So go to your local emergency room, call the hotline. But another thing, if you need to talk, and I put this plug in, so sorry for the people who work at these facilities, but pretty much every addiction facility will have some sort of 24-hour therapist on the phone to do intakes. And if you're struggling, maybe give an addiction facility a call and just see if you can get someone on the line who is trained as a mental health professional to talk to you. So not to flood your phone lines, but I do think that that is a really good resource that's just out there that people don't know about who are struggling with suicidal ideation.
That's good. Good to know. Good to know all those resources and everything. Well, thank you so much, Hannah, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Really good. Really good talk.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Yes. I appreciated it.
All right. Well, until next time.